Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. The Democratic Party that is set to nominate Hillary Clinton for president is not the same party that twice nominated her husband, Bill Clinton, for president. The party's 2016 platform, or statement of positions on major issues, is the most progressive in the party's history, according to Senator Bernie Sanders. Hillary Clinton is backing key parts of the platform. She is expected to accept the Democratic nomination on Thursday, the last day of the four-day convention in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The 2016 platform is more liberal than the positions Bill Clinton campaigned on and supported during his two terms as president from 1993 to 2001. Clinton vowed to end welfare as we know it and signed a 1996 bill that put time limits and work requirements on welfare recipients. He signed the Defense of Marriage Act, which defined marriage as a union of one man and one woman. The Supreme Court, in effect, ended the law when it ruled last year that same-sex couples can marry. Bill Clinton also negotiated the North American Free Trade Agreement, which Hillary Clinton now says did not do what many had hoped in creating jobs for Americans. In 1992, when Clinton accepted the Democratic presidential nomination, he spoke about what government should and should not do. He promised a government that is leaner, not meaner, a government that expands opportunity, not bureaucracy, a government that understands that jobs must come from growth under a free enterprise system. Brian Brox is a political science professor at Tulane University in the southern state of Louisiana. He said some of the policies Bill Clinton championed in the 1990s came from a group called the Democratic Leadership Council, or DLC, which he helped lead. The DLC called for new centrist policies after the party lost three straight presidential elections from 1980 to 1988 with candidates considered too liberal, Brox said. John Breaux is a former Democratic senator from Louisiana. He replaced Clinton as DLC chairman after Clinton was elected president. It is a different time now with different issues. Bro said Clinton carried southern states when he ran for president. Those states are now solidly Republican in national races. That means Democrats do not feel the need to support centrist proposals that appeal to southern voters, he said. The 2016 Democratic Party has gone further than the party led by Bill Clinton in the 1990s. For example, Bill Clinton supported and won passage of a bill requiring most companies to offer family leave so a worker could deal with an emergency. Now, Democrats and Hillary Clinton propose that the law do more. As president, Clinton balanced his centrist proposals with some liberal bills. He proposed a bill, which his wife pushed in Congress, to provide health insurance for all Americans. He also proposed a crime bill with a 5-day waiting period for handgun purchases and higher taxes on wealthy Americans to lower the deficit. The crime and tax bills passed. The health care legislation did not. Clinton has mostly managed to get favorable ratings from a majority of Americans despite continued controversy. Last month, Clinton was criticized for meeting with Attorney General Loretta Lynch at an airport. The meeting occurred just days before she said the government would not prosecute Hillary Clinton for using a private email server as Secretary of State.
Health officials, experts, advocates, researchers, and many others gathered in South Africa last week for the 2016 International AIDS Conference. AIDS is short for Acquired Immune Deficiency Syndrome. As the conference was ending, organizers told delegates to go back home and start the hard work toward an ambitious goal. The goal is to end the threat from the disease by the year 2030. The 5-day conference offered delegates a chance to hear about ways to stop new infections from HIV, the virus responsible for the disease. They also could attend discussions on treatment for those infected and efforts to develop a vaccine for AIDS. The first International AIDS Conference was held 21 years ago. Since then, health officials and researchers have made progress against the disease. Yet HIV/AIDS has killed tens of millions of people, infected tens of millions, and continues to infect many more. More than 1 million AIDS-related deaths were recorded last year. 17 million infected people are receiving antiretroviral drugs, but 20 million others have yet to be treated. This led conference organizers to appeal to all nations and their citizens to do what is necessary to stop these numbers from increasing. Olive Chisana was a co-chair of the conference this year.
We need to heed the call to start a social justice movement that aims to reinvigorate the HIV response, similar to the global anti-apartheid movement that we had.
Apartheid was a system of racial separation in South Africa. It ended in the 1990s. At the conference, the South African Health Minister, Aaron Motsoaledi, called on young people to launch a campaign to bring about a new generation free from HIV.
A global campaign led by young people is urgent. If we don't, we'll not be able to achieve a generation free of HIV and AIDS by 2030.
Linda Gail Becker is the incoming president of the International AIDS Society. She made an emotional appeal to the Global Fund to fight AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria. The fund collects donations and provides financing to prevent and treat those diseases.
Whether people live or die in many countries will depend on how donors respond to the Global Fund's call to action. Lives depend on the Global Fund.
The message to all delegates was simple and clear. The conference might have ended, but the hard work has just begun. I'm Ana Mateo.
The conservation group Save the Elephants says Vietnam has become one of the world's biggest illegal ivory markets. It also says that 75% of ivory buyers in Vietnam come from China. The group recently published a report called Vietnam's Illicit ivory trade. The report found that more than 16,000 ivory items were for sale in over 240 stores across several Vietnamese cities. In a similar report in 2008, 2,400 products were for sale in the same places. Esmond Martin is a researcher at Save the Elephants. He says most of the ivory tusks sold in Vietnam come from African ports on the Indian Ocean. He says that 2/3 of the ivory that leaves Africa goes to China and Vietnam. And while the Chinese ivory market has decreased in recent years, Vietnam's ivory market has increased greatly, Martin says. The big difference between the Chinese and Vietnamese market is that the China market on the retail, legal side, and perhaps on the illegal retail side, has been going down. But the Vietnam market has been absolutely booming. The investigators said the ivory trade had increased in Vietnam because of corruption, a lack of law enforcement, and an increase in travelers in Asia. The Chinese government has in the past few years strengthened its efforts to end the illegal elephant ivory trade. Researcher Lucy Vine says that lower ivory prices have caused Chinese ivory buyers to cross the border into Vietnam. Prices in China are far higher than in Vietnam. That is why Vietnam is a major place for mainland Chinese to come down and buy ivory out of their country illegally. The report notes that prices for comparable ivory items cost 3 times more in Chinese cities like Beijing and Shanghai than they do in Vietnamese cities like Hanoi and Ho Chi Minh City. Ian Douglas Hamilton is the founder and head of the Save the Elephants Conservation Group. He said it is important to close new ivory markets that are opening in Asia. He calls the recent study a warning that when you think you are on the verge of solving a problem, it may shift across the borders of other states. In this case, the problem now of illegal ivory trading has shifted across the border with Vietnam. Experts estimate that 100,000 African elephants were killed for their ivory tusks between 2010 and 2012. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
This is What's Trending Today. Monday was the opening night of the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The Democratic Party is set to officially name Hillary Clinton as its presidential nominee. The first night of the political meeting included many high-profile speeches in support of Clinton. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders was, until recently, a Democratic presidential candidate himself. In his speech, he spoke directly to his supporters in the audience and across the country. He urged them to now support Hillary Clinton for president. Elizabeth Warren also spoke. The Massachusetts senator attacked Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump, calling him a man who must never be president of the United States. But it was First Lady Michelle Obama who stole the show in Philadelphia. Her powerful and emotional speech is already being called by some one of the best speeches in Democratic National Convention history. She spoke as a mother who wishes for the next president to be a role model for her two children and for children across America. She said that, "In this election, there is only one person I trust with that responsibility. Only one person who I believe is truly qualified to be President of the United States. And that is our friend, Hillary Clinton." She praised Clinton for her record as a public servant and her lifelong devotion to our nation's children. Obama became emotional when she talked about living for the past 8 years in the White House, a house, she said, that was built by slaves. She said that she has watched her children, two beautiful, intelligent black young women, playing with their dogs on the White House lawn. The First Lady also said that Hillary Clinton has shown her daughters and children around the country that it is possible for a woman to be president of the United States. Obama did not say Trump's name once in her 14-minute speech, but she made remarks clearly directed at him. She said she wants the next president to be someone who understands that the issues a president faces are not black and white and cannot be boiled down to 140 characters. Trump often makes 140-character statements about his positions on his Twitter account, @RealDonaldTrump. And she told the audience to not let anyone ever tell you that this country isn't great, that somehow we need to make it great again. Trump's political slogan is "Make America Great Again." Political observers and people on social media praised the First Lady's speech. Matthew Dowd worked on Republican President George W. Bush's 2004 re-election campaign. He tweeted Monday that Obama's speech was the best, most effective speech of last 2 weeks, and really the season. The New York Daily News even decided to quickly change its Tuesday front cover after Obama's speech. The new cover read, "The Lady is Her Champ." Last week, Michelle Obama's 2008 Democratic National Convention speech was a headline topic after Melania Trump's speech included very similar words. But her 2016 speech may go down as one of the most memorable of the entire election season. And that's what's trending today. It is late afternoon in the small village of Fandin, Senegal. Students begin to arrive at the local school. They arrive on bicycles, motorbikes, and donkey carts. Under the shade of a giant baobab tree, they chat in the dusty schoolyard. Lycée Fandin is a typical rural high school in Senegal. The school has no electricity. There are no glass windows, only square openings to let in light and fresh air. The students have no books. They crowd into a small classroom, their elbows touching. Isidore Teen is the teacher. He is young, energetic, and always smiling. He leads the class singing Clementine, an American folk song.
Welcome to the English Club of Fondaine. Fondaine is a rural village about 3 hours east of Senegal's capital, Dakar. The students come here from nearby villages to practice speaking English. The English Club of Fondaine is just one of a growing number of English clubs in Senegal. With no tuition or tests, the clubs offer a low-pressure way to learn English. And, for many Senegalese, it is their only opportunity to learn English. Teen started the English Club of Fondaine 3 years ago. It has grown to become one of the most active clubs in the area.
So when I came here, I saw that the students, they did not practice their English. And I said that creating the English Club is an opportunity for me to help students speak and practice the language. Because the mastery of a language is in the speaking.
To encourage communicative learning, Teen uses songs, games, and discussions of current events.
Senegal is a country of 14 million people in Western Africa. It is among the more peaceful, stable, and democratic countries in Africa. French is the country's official language. Most Senegalese also speak a local African language, such as Wolof. English is an official language in 21 African countries, mostly in the eastern part of the continent. Africans in Anglophone countries sometimes have mixed feelings about the language. On the one hand, it is a major advantage to speak the language of globalization. On the other hand, English was imposed on them by British colonialism. Senegal was a French colony until 1960. Most Senegalese do not connect the English language to colonialism. For them, French is the language of the colonizers. French remains the language of business, government, and education in Senegal.
Mohamedou Diouf is the president of the English Teachers Association of Senegal. He says English has been gaining ground on French in recent years.
I think the first influence comes from the USA as the leading country. And they see the USA as a success story, and they just want to do like them.
Diouf says American culture is widely spread in Senegal. In the 1970s and 80s, American musicians like James Brown and Michael Jackson were very popular. Today, young people love rap music. Diouf says that Senegalese are also inspired by the progress of African Americans, from slavery to the election of President Barack Obama. Many African Americans have roots in the Senegambia region of Africa. Their ancestors were captured and brought to the New World as slaves. Obama made an emotional visit to the slave port of Gorée in 2013. Diouf says he sometimes has to remind young people that Obama is America's president, not Senegal's.
Even with an openness toward American culture, few Senegalese can speak fluent English. English is taught as a subject in secondary school, but Senegal's public school system is struggling. A United Nations study says that only about 25% of Senegalese graduate from high school. Only about 42% of adults can read and write. Diouf is especially concerned about the quality of education in rural areas.
Sometimes you can have over 100 in a class, which make it impossible to have what we call communicative activities, group works, because of the noise it will bring about. The second thing is most of our schools are in very poor areas, with no access to computers, no access even to electricity. Even electricity is a problem for 50% of our schools, so let alone having access to internet.
Robin Hinders teaches English courses at the University of Chess. She is an English language fellow supported by the U.S. Department of State.
Many times when you ask a student, why do you want to learn English, the first response I almost always hear is, I love English. I like it because it makes me feel happy when I speak English.
Hinders says people on the street often approach her and want to speak English. One of her many local friends is Fali, a tea seller at the bus station. He has taught himself basic English. Fali, who cannot walk, is happy when Hinders sits down at his table for tea.
Robin! You sit down.
Yes, your children are happy.
Very happy.
And they're healthy.
Very
good. I'm fine.
And you?
I'm fine.
Your family?
Everybody is good.
In addition to Hinders's fellowship, the U.S. Department of State supports several educational exchange programs in Senegal. One program is called the Young African Leaders Initiative, or YALI. The YALI program brings sub-Saharan Africans to the U.S. for leadership training. English fluency is required for all candidates. Aaron Williams is the Regional English Language Officer for the U.S. Embassy in Senegal.
We're bringing young African leaders from every country in Africa to the United States to study, to meet with other Africans, to meet with the president, and we're only bringing people who speak English. So countries like Senegal, Francophone countries, need a lot more help in preparing their candidates for the YALI program.
The YALI program is looking for students like Jean Celestine. He is a member of the English Club of Fonden. He always sits in the front of the classroom and pays extra close attention to teens' lessons. He says English is the passport of our future.
I realize that English is the most spoken language in the world. Because everywhere you go, you will meet people that speak English. And if you cannot speak English, you will have some problem.
Teen closes the English lesson with a famous children's song. I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.